work. The opportunity to interact with the industry is one that I never pass up. And some of the work we do in the molecular field is like a 25-year horizon to getting out to you guys. And I'd also like to acknowledge the great input that we've had in this project right from its inception. The Red Angus Association has been outstanding, and leadership in Red Angus have worked with us to design the project and get it kicked off. And Bob and Larry and Greg have been just outstanding. The whole has been okay too. So if you have any problem with the accent, you know, just say, hold up, man, you know, say that again, all right? Okay. So I think, I'm not really sure who put this title up, but it certainly fills the screen in nicely, doesn't it? So I'm not going to go through the title. Okay. So I want to give you a really brief program overview and sort of set some context here, and then we'll sort of move into the project and tell you a little bit more about the project. So in my program, you know, we have some long-term goals. So to understand mechanism is an area. So I'm a physiologist, and to all the geneticists in the room, I apologise for my lack of genetics expertise. And you can stop me and correct me anytime you feel like it if I say something that's genetically inappropriate. So physiologists are always interested in mechanism and what's going on in the biology of the system, and that's largely what drives the program. And we have this long-term interest in looking at the interaction between efficiency and product quality. One of our objectives is to take what we know from that mechanistic work and also our applied work and look towards providing industry with tools to improve profitability. And you'll see that the physiologist coming out here again, and this will be a recurring theme. Our approaches include genetic approaches, but also the very, very important G by E interactions, which drives so much of what we actually observe in a phenotype. And of course, finally, environmental, purely environmental, and using that in the broadest sense. We've got a whole bunch of different things that we're working on in the lab and across the program. So we work on drug delivery. We're using nanomaterials for drug delivery and gene therapy, and we do a lot of that in cell culture, and we take that, like I said, that's a 25-year horizon, and we're trying to understand mechanisms that underlie metabolic efficiency. And finally, this applied piece to the program is understanding residual feed intake, and of course that also has an underlying mechanistic piece. So I'm going to give you some background on the program. Talk a little bit about feed efficiency, what is RFI, and Gordy this morning provided a very comprehensive perspective on the biological drivers of variation in RFI, and I'll apologise now because I'm going to be a little bit repetitive, but one of the things that I discovered, I first heard about residual feed intake from a fellow named Robert Hurd, who's since become a good friend. And that was about 1991, and the first time I heard about it, I realised that it was really important, but I didn't really understand it. And it took two or three conversations with Robert sort of getting my head around it. So if you're hearing about RFI for the first time, and my sense of it is that there are more and more people are getting more and more familiar with the concept, but however, bear with me and we'll spend a little bit of time going over the basics. So I'll try not to tarry too long on the basics and the introductory material. Because the project's also very much looking at the maintenance energy EPD, and I'll talk about the design in a few minutes, I'm going to give you some background on that and of course, this group is very much interested in cow herd efficiency, and you'll see that theme come right through the presentation. And I'll say it several times, but one of the biggest holes in the data is understanding mature cow efficiency, and that's where we need to put some more resources. So just right back to the basics. Measuring efficiency. I like to call this gross feed efficiency, or feed gain ratio. And there's the basic equation. Feed consumed divided by weight gain gives gross feed efficiency. The limitations with using gross feed efficiency are firstly that it's highly correlated with growth rate. So it's confounded with maturity pattern, size, appetite, composition of gain. And all those things are correlated. And if you are going to use gross feed efficiency as a selection tool, what's going to happen is that's going to favour genetically larger cattle. And that's certainly undesirable for a whole lot of reasons. And you all know them as well as I do. So the new measure, residual feed intake, is by definition we're measuring actual intake of individual animals, and then we're comparing it to the predicted intake by a fairly straightforward equation, and that straightforward equation is based on gain and body weight and the heritability. There are some studies out there that report fairly low heritability, but mostly they seem to be moderate in the 0.3 to 0.4 range. And I guess the single most important thing that I can see about RFI, if it's ever going to be any use to us, is it appears to be independent of growth and maturity patterns and many other production traits. And so no one is ever going to propose that we go after single trait selection, and so this is a wonderful tool if it does indeed turn out to be independent of most other production parameters. It can be fit into a selection index. And the interpretation piece comes a little takes a little time to get accustomed to. So this is one of those measurements where positive RFI denotes intake of animals that's higher than their requirements by the definition, and negative RFI animals that eat less and produce the same weight gain. So this is one of those things where negative is better. And Gordy showed you a scatter plot this morning and some studies that he's conducted. These are Angus, purebred Angus steers. Study we conducted in about 2002 or 3 and reported in Journal of Animal Science in 2006. So if you're going after fast-growing animals and you're looking at animals that you might feel are desirable in terms of gross feed efficiency, they'd be the animals that are fast-growing with a relatively high feed intake. So in this slide, we see feed intake on the y-axis against live weight gain. So here at this end are the faster growing animals, and as we move up the scale here, these are animals with higher intake. So in terms of feed gain, that would be the population that we'd be looking for. And so if we select for animals at this end of the curve, these are going to be the larger framed animals, and eventually selection on that basis will increase the size of the herd, the frame size and maturity score. So, same slide again, but with the red circle gone and now these two small circles, similarly to what Gordy showed you. And you can see here that converting the kilogram, the scientific piece of it to the pounds per day, average daily gain for these two animals, around about 3.2 pounds a day for these two. One of them's consuming 40.7 and the other one 56.1 pounds of feed. So the RFI value for each animal that's represented on this scatter plot represents the difference between the line and each data point. So if you want an animal that's faster growing and still has good RFI, you may look at this one. If you were looking to reduce your cow size, and if this was a group of bulls we were characterising, and you wanted a smaller frame size bull, perhaps you'd be looking at one that's down the slope this way a little. But distant from this mean of the population, this regression line here. So this one is eating much more than we'd expect for its level of gain, which would be here. That's the mean of the population at that level of gain. And this one's eating much less at the same level of gain. And this, at this point, represents the mean or the expected level of feed intake. So to sort of summarise that, the value of RFI appears to be that we're looking for animals that will consume less feed but weigh the same at harvest versus the high RFI type. Reduction in feed costs without negatively affecting growth, reproduction, carcass or meat quality are all things that we really want to go after, and these are some of the things that we really don't understand very well just yet. And of course there are some useful environmental incomes from going after this as well, because we're going to see reduced impact on arrangements, and so we can be a lot more environmentally friendly, and this directly pertains to the cow-calf situation. And finally, the reduction of production of methane, manure, nitrogen through that higher realised efficiency. So can we get there? Gordy showed you a variation on this slide this morning. This is Rob Hurd's slide from 2004, he and his student Emma Richardson. And I'm just going to point to a couple of things here. Protein turnover, tissue metabolism, stress here, that he shows it as about 37% of the total contribution to the total variation in RFI. So it looks like about, in this category, about 40% of the variation in RFI is related to basal, to some level of metabolism. And there's a bit of metabolism also in activity, it's also reflected in heat increment of fermentation. The other thing that I want to point out, and we're seeing some other data coming out now from several studies that show that body composition does in fact contribute to variation in RFI. Rob reports about 5% of the total variation, and you know the data looks like it's fairly consistent, and maybe between 5 and 10%. So this may indicate that we could have a problem. We may, because the more efficient animals tend to be leaner, and the less efficient animals tend to be fatter. So what we have to be very careful of is if we're going to go after RFI, that we don't inadvertently select for animals that don't lay down fat, or another danger may be reflected in marbling. So, and there, ergo, our interest, our long-term interest in looking at the interaction of feed efficiency and product quality. So there are a couple of little issues out there, very important issues, and the reason I say little is because it only looks like a small proportion. I don't know. Was that I? Yes. Okay. So don't lean on the stand. So the body composition is something we definitely need to keep an eye on, but it does appear to be only a small contributor to the total variation in RFI. And the other thing I want to point out here is this nice category here called other, of 27% of the variation in RFI, that we do not have a clue about. All right. So in terms of how we look at the cow-calf situation too, as well as all stages of life, you know, this protein turnover tissue metabolism is one that we're really interested in pursuing, because it has ramifications for how the female herd does out on the range or on the ranch. Of course, it also has implications in the feedlot for the steers. So what about correlations with other traits? question marks here for you for things that we don't know enough about just yet. Production and reproduction. Again, thinking about cow-calf efficiency. What are the effects on birth weight? What are the effects on fertility? What's happening in terms of pasture grazing? Is RFI measured in heifers and steers in a feedlot situation or in a standard post-weaning test on high roughage diet? Do animals rank the same as they would when do heifers on a growing diet rank the same as they would when they're mature cows? So, and again, I wanted to point out this impact on the rangelands and also acknowledge what a big piece of total cost of production goes into raising a calf and keeping that cow. The final one on this slide, the end product quality, is something, as I said, we've been working on quite a bit. And so, you know, we're also interested in keeping our eye on carcass yield and palatability, and there are still some questions out there that we need to answer. So that brings me to the ME EPD, and this has been introduced by the Red Angus Association as an efficiency measure. It's a derived trait. The inputs include cow weight at weaning corrected to a body condition score of 5. And there's another piece of it that's the milky EPD is, I believe, about 10% of it. And I think that's pretty close, and I'm not seeing anyone say, no, you got that wrong, right? So I think we're pretty close there. So, again, I want to indicate, yes, that does provide a nice measure of maintenance, and that maintenance looks like the relationship may be around about 40% of the variation in RFI. So we're really interested to start to understand what these relationships may be and what the nature of those relationships actually are. So the project's actually entitled our Feed Efficiency Research and Outreach for the Beef Industry. And this is one of those integrated proposals grants funded by CS Rees. And the integrated have to have two elements, two of the three land grant mission elements. So research, teaching, outreach. And this one has research and outreach. And I'm so pleased to say that, you know, we've made such a great connection. I feel as though we've made a great connection with the industry, and opportunities like this give us yet another chance to let you know what we're up to. So here's our collaborator works on for the wood grazing company. It's Jeff Grill. They're in the business of AI there in last summer. And I want to point to a couple of key points in the project, and then I'm going to briefly go through the stated objectives so you can get a feel for where we're going with this. So the studies are on the progeny of Red Angus bulls that are divergent to maintenance energy EPD. So we have 12 bulls in the project, and we're aiming to raise between 20 to 40 progeny per sire across the 4 and probably 5 years of the project. So we're going to begin to characterise these bulls for residual feed intake. We'll study the relationships between maintenance energy EPD, RFI and other production traits. And we'll study the underlying physiological drivers of variation in RFI. And indeed learn more about perhaps some of the underlying physiological drivers of variation in ME-EPD. These are the formal project objectives straight out of the grant, and I'm just going to paraphrase these. So this one says we want to evaluate and quantify the relationships between RFI and product quality in the progeny of those sires. The second one, to evaluate and quantify relationships between RFI and finishing phase. So there's another little step in here where we're looking at the standard post-weaning test, the 70-day test that we use to evaluate animals for RFI. And so what we're doing with the steers is we're putting them back into the test unit after the standard 70-day RFI test, and then we're putting them on a finishing ration, stepping them up over 4 steps, and then we're evaluating their feed efficiency on a finishing ration. And as Gordy pointed out this morning, it looks as though that measuring under those two different dietary regimes may in fact give us somewhat different answers, but there is a partial correlation there, and that's something that we need to study a lot more as well to really get a good understanding of that. The third objective is to look at this indicator, this hormone or growth factor known as insulin-like growth factor 1, IGF-1, and that one is, the jury's still out on the usefulness of IGF-1 as well. But we need to, it's a question we can ask in the project relatively easily, so we're taking blood at weaning and looking at that relationship. So taking it to the RFI story to the next step, to actually develop, for this population at least, an RFI EPD for those bulls, and look at the relationship between MEEPD and RFI-EPD. And the fifth research objective, which is a social sciences type objective, and my colleague Dr. Ahola is going to speak to you quite, fill you in on this aspect of the project. So we're looking at what you guys think and what you guys know about RFI and feed efficiency, and trying to get a handle on what the level of understanding is, and whether is it useful or not useful. And this is one of the first studies, I think, that has been conducted to actually get producers involved in the process to systematically ask questions about something, you know, related directly to production. And it's been an amazing experience to work with the social sciences people, because they think about the world in a whole different way. But it's been great. Multidisciplinary is a lot of fun. I'm not going to talk any more about that. We'll leave that to Dr. Ahola. But we have two outreach objectives as well, through the usual mechanisms of outreach from a land grant, and also the web-based type outreach through this e-extension. So a little bit about the bulls. The design summary: the bulls are, as I said, high and low MEEPD. So and I'm just going to go through this fairly quickly. Oop, back one. So here's the MEEPD for the bulls from the high group and from the low group, and we'll just concentrate on these highlighted lines on the table here. And so the average of the group is about 14 on the high MEEPD and negative 8.83 on the low. And we tried to balance them for all other traits, and Dr. Cruz has been very helpful in helping us get this selected. And one of the challenges has been, because it takes a long time to get high accuracy for MEEPD, those bulls are rather old by the time that the accuracy gets high enough, and we set a 0.5 bar for the accuracy, so we only accepted bulls that were above 0.5. We have one there just under the mark, and we were able to identify semen from enough bulls to get this to go for us. So here's the design: three cohorts. We're producing about 400 calves over those cohorts. We have two herds, one at the University of Idaho in Salmon, Idaho, and one at the Wood Cattle Company in South Dakota. And that's where the females reside and where the calves are raised to weaning. And the steer progeny are followed right through to slaughter, and we look at product quality. And we follow the heifers through to an RFI test, and then they go back home. And this is the area where, as I said, we need to get more information and build more. And I'm sure that this piece of it is going to be of great interest to this group especially. And of course, the physiological indicators. And we're also, because I'm a physiologist, we're building in some other things, and I'll tell you a little bit about that. So you all know about the GrowSafe system, the electronic feeding system. It provides us with continuous monitoring, reduces labour needs, and it's very much self-operating, although it does need a little help along the way, quality control of course. And the disadvantages is it costs a few bucks, and more than I've got, but thank you to the National Science Foundation, who kicked in a supplementary grant, and we were actually able to purchase a grow safe system for the ranch and salmon. So thank goodness for funders, otherwise we never get anything done, right? So disadvantages, costly to install, and one thing is not all animals can be at the bunk like in a regular feed yard situation. So you can, with growing animals, you can run about 7 or 8 animals per node. And each one of these nodes is on a way cell. And here's the old-fashioned way of doing it. Still works really well. Is Miranda weighing out feed there for us. These are the Callan gates. We have 60 Callan gates in this set in Moscow. And Callan gates are great, but personnel intensive. And if you've got slave labour, it's okay. But how many graduate students in the room? Yeah, you've all fed cattle. You know, it's demanding. It's twice a day, right on time, morning, evening, and the integrity of the data rests with the graduate students who accurately weigh feed out and weigh feed back. So this is how we test. This year we test our steers and heifers this way. We've got some new physiological tests underway, and of course, the goal is to find livestock that are superior for RFI. The traditional test is our 70-day standardised test, and we measure our individual feed intake over that post-weaning 70-day test. We've got alternatives that are coming online now, and we're all hearing a lot about them. And these include use of gene markers we've heard a lot about in the last couple of days, and also tests that tell us something about the physiology of the animal. I want to say that all of these things are going to go together to really accelerate our knowledge of RFI, but for sure we're going to need extensive RFI testing, and that means standard testing of animals in this 70-day test period to validate any of these new technologies. And that's not going to go away. We'll always need to come back and validate. And I've seen examples of physiological tests being introduced that have actually caused a reduction in the phenotyping, and believe me, that leads to undesirable outcomes very quickly. So I can't emphasise enough the importance of getting animals phenotyped, even though it is awfully expensive. Just a little bit about some physiology that we're doing here on the project. So we've done this on our steers and heifers at the end of the RFI test, and we actually take a muscle biopsy from the biceps femoris muscle. And you'll see this is supervised by a veterinarian, and the animal's shaved, and they get local anaesthetic, and we take about a 2 to 3 gram sample of that muscle. And we'll be slaughtering the steers in a couple of weeks' time. This is the first group that's come through. We actually bred cows back 2 years ago, and didn't have any money at that time, just bet on the come that we'd get the grant. And so we've got a number of animals going through already, and those steers will be slaughtered in about 2 weeks' time. So here, what we're doing here is we're looking at gene expression. So this isn't the genotype of the animal, but these are the genes that are being expressed in that muscle at that time in their lives. So there are a number of potential candidate genes that we want to look at, and this comes back to my argument about understanding G by E. We need to understand the genes that are being expressed and determining those phenotypes, because we know that we've got about a 0.4 heritability. Okay, so the genetics is contributing about 0.4 of what we understand, but there's still 0.6 out there that we don't understand, and we need to get a better handle on this. So the physiologist's plug. Understanding the interaction of the genome with the environment and generally the environmental effects in determining what genes are being expressed here. And we feel that looking in, of course, we want to look in major metabolic tissues that the physiologist would look in. So we're working in muscle, in fat, and in liver. And in this round here, we'll only be taking muscle from these guys, but in the future, we hope to be taking liver biopsies and also fat as well, trying to build up the whole picture. Just some preliminary results from the study. So these are the heifer and steer progeny from the first round, and typical scatter plot that you see. Again, set up the same way. So there's dry matter intake in pounds per day versus average daily gain in pounds per day. And each one of these figure forms here on the relationship shows represents the progeny of a particular bull. And you can use your imagination or look at that and say, oh, there may be some animals that are mostly represented below the line and some that might be represented above the line. But it's very early days. Too small a number of animals for us to comment on. But as we accumulate the data with those 400 progeny over 3 years, we're going to be in a lot better shape to really start to understand what this relationship is between maintenance energy, EPD, and RFI. So the data tell us typically the mean of mean value of that whole population for RFI will be zero. This correlation is typical with other studies. This just tells you that we know what we're doing and we can get it right, and it agrees with the literature, and other scientists see these data and they say, yeah, you got it right, guys. We of course, going on, we're going to look at correlations that are typical with the other studies that we've done in our program, and we'll be looking at, as I said, at carcass and end product traits that will be evaluated this summer in this first round. Another point, we see no relationship between RFI and average daily gain, so RFI is independent of growth rate in these data. It is correlated with dry matter intake, and that's typical, and another factor that we need to build in when we're thinking about this, using this, is that if we select for RFI, that we don't depress dry matter intake. So again, another little caveat. We want our cows to have healthy intakes, but we still want them to be efficient, and certainly we don't want to be selecting inadvertently for reducing dry matter intake. In the data that we have, no sex differences detected, so the steers and heifers pretty much told us the same story. And that the range is typical. Where we talk about range there, we talk about from the minimum to the maximum. So that's a range of about 35%. So summary and next steps. We can make note from the initial data here, from that small data set in the first cohort, no formal conclusions at this point. The data provide our some preliminary indications, and we believe that we're well on the way to getting a really good handle on this interaction between RFI and maintenance energy EPD. And of course, we need those additional data, and I guess you get tired of hearing scientists say that. We always need more data. We're always data hungry. Okay. And again, I'd like to reiterate, especially for this group, We need to be studying mature cows and looking at their intake and looking against their performance and getting a better understanding about what's happening in the mature cows. Finally, like I said a couple of times, you can't do it without the money. So thanks to CS Rees and also the National Science Foundation for the equipment grant. And Mark said we're going to do questions after Jason speaks, or shall we take one or two now?
We can take one or two questions now if you want to, and for Dr. Hill, I'll be setting up the next set of slides for Dr. Hill.
Any questions?
Dr. Hill, for purposes of your study, when you say fat, are you going to define that is, will you differentiate between back fat and between intermuscular fat?
The data that we have in the study to date are both on intramuscular fat at the 12th, 13th rib and also subcutaneous fat. So in the studies that we've conducted, the study there that I showed you with on the Angus cattle from the 2002-03 study, yes, we see that variation in fatness, in subcutaneous fatness, but we saw no variation in intramuscular fat in that particular study. And that's consistent with most of the work we've seen today. Does that answer your question? Sir?
Does it matter what 70-day period you collect the data in the life cycle of the steer, the growth feeding phase?
That's a great question. The short answer is no and yes. Sorry. So, ideally, what we want to do is collect the data when the animals are in their linear growth phase in a post-weaning test, so that composition of gain is much more consistent in animals in that development period. As animals get older, their rate of deposition of fat and lean becomes more divergent. So it just gets more difficult to measure animals accurately in a later phase of life. But yes, you can do it, and in some tests they're actually testing animals over a much longer period and using the entire period to evaluate their gain and their intake and thus their RFI. I guess the Australian standard was set up on the post-weaning 70-day test, and I've been rigorous in sticking with that, but that's my preference, and I see nothing to indicate to me that there's anything wrong with doing it over the longer period. But having said that too, there are some diet effects that we need to build into our understanding of what's happening. So high roughage versus high energy diet.